Hello and welcome to a brand new episode from Insight from Cyclos Friendly Church. I'm Lynn Davies and with me is Matthew Horsball, and today we are going to talk about home groups, home Bible studies, cell groups, whatever you like to call them.
Yeah, now would you believe, in all the time that I've been a Christian, I've never actually been to a home group. I've just found the whole thing a bit daunting, really, on two fronts. First of all, the actually getting there and, you know, the aspect of being in a home group. I'm in somebody's house and I've, you know, it's a bit, all this stuff I've got to deal with. And then the fact that if I upset the wrong person in the home group because I've got a different opinion to them, they've still got to take me home. And I don't know. It's just, I've just always steered away from them. But they sound like they're a really good idea. And one of these days I'll go and do one and then I'll actually tell you what I really think of them rather than what I think of them. But there's a lot of inquiries that we get, and there's a lot of common sense really when it comes to home groups. And I'm guessing you've been to some home groups in your time, Lynn, right?
Yes, I have been to some home groups. I haven't attended one for over 10 years, I have to say. So it's been a while. I actually ran my own home group at one point when I was in that big church in London. And that was really cool, being asked to actually run a home group, because it was back in the day where my confidence levels were definitely not as high as they are now. And I just wasn't sure I could do it. But then the youth leader said that you can definitely do this and let's just figure out a way to do it. So I've led my own home group. I have also attended home groups before that. And when I attended home groups, I was in a student setting, which was a lot more informal. And like everyone was living quite similar lives. Like we were all students. We all had basically no money. So we were all having to chip in with stuff. So we would have dinners, for example. The one home group I went to for a long time, we had dinners. And we would rotate paying for the dinners. We wouldn't always rotate where the group was because it wouldn't be as easy for some people to have them as others. But we would rotate who was cooking for the day and who was buying things for the day. And that was really cool. And also in that church that I was in when I was studying, we had student lunches. So we would have lunch at someone's house every Sunday. So I really got comfortable in being in a home setting from there. But I definitely think it has to do with the setting you're in at the time and the other people as well. Do you feel like you gel with them? Because when you are at someone's house, of course, you are, I wouldn't exactly use the word vulnerable, but it is different from being in a church, and getting on with them is more important than when you're in a church building, because then you're on neutral grounds. Like you say, if you upset someone at church, it's easier to face that in some ways than it is in a home group setting where you feel that you have to be with that person for the rest of the time. And like you also said, it's a lot about common sense when it comes to home groups. And there are similar things to consider, actually, as there is at coffee time.
Yes, similar things to coffee time, and then just extending it outwards, I guess, because you're in somebody's house. So, I mean, I've not been to a home group before, but I've been to plenty of people's houses for the first time. And I think, actually, what I want to know is, what's your address? How easy is it to get to? You know, is there anything unusual to worry about? Like, okay, it's number 81, but it's not actually next to number 79. It's, you know, because there's something in the way, or it's down a little, you know, side bit of the road or something. So I need to know that so that I can direct, especially if I'm not getting a lift there, so I can direct a taxi driver there or what have you. And then once I'm in, where do I put my shoes? Where do I put my coat? Where's the toilet? And where can I sit down? And yeah, I don't necessarily need to know the shape of the whole house. I don't need to go on a tour of the house, but I do need to know that basic information.
Yeah, absolutely. And then another thing of the home group as well is which text you are going to be studying, or if it's a Bible debate thing, what book in the Bible are you debating or studying? So that's important to know as well. And the further in advance you know this, the better, because of course, Torch Trust, we can provide those resources.
We can. And it's actually a really important service that we offer, is providing those resources. Even if it's something that's not in our catalogue at present, if you get in touch with us and say, look, we're in a home group and we're studying this text, we will, you know, if we haven't got it, contact the publishers and ask them if they can send it to us in an electronic format. And most of the time they will say yes. And once that happens, we can run it through an automated system to produce a basic Braille copy or a large print copy, or we can send it off to some volunteers and get them to read it. And then obviously it gets proofread and finalized and edited. And if it's in several volumes, it gets divided up into volumes neatly and all of that. But generally this process now will take somewhere around 6 weeks. Sometimes it's a bit shorter. Sometimes it's a bit longer if it's a really quiet time. But it doesn't take the months and months and months that it used to take. So we're very happy to take on requests like that. And we would still sell it at the recommended retail price, because once it's done, it's in the catalogue and other people would be able to buy that for the recommended retail price as well.
Well, the further you know in advance, like I previously mentioned, the better. And of course, it does happen sometimes that somebody changes a text a week before and say, oh, well, we were going to study this Lent course, but we actually prefer the other one. It's okay when that happens. It's not great for somebody with sight loss, but of course, there needs to be a certain understanding why something happens. It might not just be because it's better, but it could be another reason. It could be that they don't feel that this other Lent course was updated enough or something like that. But even still, try not to do that. That's something to avoid if possible and wherever possible.
Yeah, and even if you're making a change within the same publication, I talked about volumes before. This is quite an important thing to understand. One print page probably occupies about 2 to 2.5 Braille pages. And so if your print book is any bigger than about 40 pages, your print book is going to be divided into several Braille books, because otherwise, if you had one Braille book with 200, 300, 400 Braille pages in it, that'd be very, very unruly and very difficult to manage. So if your print book is in, say, 100 pages, that might come in 2 or even 3 or possibly even 4 volumes of Braille, depending on, you know, how text dense your stuff is. So if you're moving from, say, page 25 to page 75, just because the person with sight loss, and this happens in large print as well, by the way, just because the person with sight loss has technically got the whole text in Braille, they might not have brought the whole text. They might only have brought the volume that they thought that they would need on that occasion. So in advance notice of page numbers, particularly if you're going out of sequence, so they know, okay, actually I brought volume 2 this week, but I need to bring volume 3 next week or something, you know, that's invaluable.
Yeah, that's right. And some home groups, just like the one I led, for example, we were given an email handout each week for the things that we were supposed to be discussing. So we didn't have a book or we didn't have a course as such, and the Bible passages were all included in that. And for me, who could handle emails, that was a very good and easy way to get it out there to the other people as well. You know, I could send it to the members of my home group so they would have it. And the church had printing facilities if that was required. If your church has Braille embossing facilities, because some churches do, then use them. And the sooner you can send those weekly group discussion points, the better, because sometimes what would happen in my church was that they would be sent me the same day and there was no way I could get to the church to get them printed out for everyone else. So that's just a basic courtesy, whether you have sight loss or not, try and send everything out as far in advance as possible for that reason. But what about transport? You were mentioning that getting somewhere would be potentially difficult, and I couldn't agree more.
Yes, so getting somewhere could be potentially difficult. Getting back from somewhere could be potentially even more difficult. So I've had situations where I've been able to get to someone's house, say, on the bus, but by the time we've finished, the buses have either stopped running or they're running so infrequently that it's not convenient to get a bus home, you know, especially if I've got to change buses. I've got to wait half an hour for the first bus, and therefore I've just missed the second bus, which means I've got to wait another half an hour for that. And so it could quite feasibly take, you know, an hour to get home when it only took 10 minutes to get there. If a lift is available, I'm always very grateful for it. I'm a little bit hesitant about asking for a lift because I just think I don't want to be an inconvenience. I don't want to be a burden. But it is very, very much appreciated, and an understanding of what can and can't be done. I think, you know, the way I would really like people to get around this problem is if they're able to give me a lift, to offer me a lift and to offer it sincerely. And then I don't feel like I'm being a burden by saying, look, can I have a lift home, please?
And also maybe an understanding between you and someone else that if you know them well and they've offered you a lift once, it's okay for you to come back and ask again, because you know that's fine. Also, the same person doesn't have to always be giving you a lift. There might be a few people attending the particular home group who are able to give you lifts and maybe happy to do so. So you could either work out an informal rota, or you could have one person who normally would give you lifts, but then if something happens to them, then you know you have other people's numbers, then you know it's okay to call them because the conversation has been had, like that they are okay to be backups for giving lifts. And sometimes, like you said, yeah, you only need a lift one way because there might be a direct bus route that takes 10 minutes and it might be stopping really close to their door. And it's nice to be able to have the independence of getting there if you wish. But then if that bus stops running, then yeah, definitely you would want to do that. And there's nothing wrong with taxis and Ubers, and they're a great backup solution. But for me, the key is in backup, because it is a costly service and somebody might not be able to afford them on a regular basis and will therefore use them if there aren't any other options, but would be happy to maybe have a lift one way or both ways. But that is something that is being worked out between two people or a few people in a group.
Yeah, I would say working it out within the group is much better than not. I went to a church, not strictly home group related, but I went to a church once where there was actually a number that you could call and somebody would organize a lift for you. And I thought this was a really good idea. The problem was I felt a bit uncomfortable phoning the number because I felt like people might have volunteered to be on the lift's rota more out of a sense of obligation than because they actually wanted to do it. So actually, I preferred to find people in the church and ask them myself. And I could also ask questions to lead up to it that way. So, for example, I could ask where they lived. And I do this quite a lot. I'll say, yeah, whereabouts have you come in from today? Oh, I've come in from Leamington. Right, okay. Well, I know then not to ask this person for a lift home unless it's the last resort, because where I'm coming from in Radford is the opposite direction. So I know it's going to be a terrible inconvenience for them to take me home. I mean, it's probably not going to be a terrible inconvenience, but it would feel like a terrible inconvenience. Whereas if somebody says, oh yeah, I've come in from Kersley or Cowden, then you're saying, yes, okay, well, fine then. You're sort of on my way home anyway. So I don't feel too bad about asking you for a lift home. And I'd sort of deal with any uncomfortableness by doing it that way.
I get your idea about people who wanted to be on that list should have volunteered to be there rather than a lift being organised. But there could be reasons why it would have been easier to call a number. Several reasons why, in fact. Perhaps there would be people who wouldn't feel comfortable asking someone directly for a lift and would rather call the number. Or there can have been a lack of anticipation each week of who would need a lift and why they would need a lift. I don't know, but it could be an option, but definitely it should be something that should be spoken about in the group.
Yeah, I think there's possibly a difference as well between a long-term lift and a short-term lift. I do actually think having a number to call to ask for a lift is a really good idea. I think more churches should do it, but it's the sort of service that I would use in, not necessarily in an emergency, but if I knew that something was going to be wrong for a week. So like, let's say I normally get the bus to church, but on this particular occasion, for the next week or two, the bus has been diverted, so it's not stopping outside my house anymore. Then I might phone the lift's number and say, look, could you arrange for somebody to come and pick me up? But I think if I was looking to make a long-term arrangement with somebody, I'd rather just make the arrangement with that somebody.
Yeah, that's understandable. And that is all we've got time for this episode. As always, if you have questions or comments or would like to contribute in any way to what we're discussing on the podcast, you can get in touch with us by phoning 01858 438 260, or you can email slfc@torchtrust.org, and that is SLFC stands for Sight Loss Friendly Church. Or alternatively, you can visit our website www.torchtrust.org. From me, Lynn Davis, and Matthew Horsepaul, thanks for listening, and goodbye.